The Wallace store stood almost a half mile beyond Jefferson Davis, on a triangular lot that faced the Soldiers' Bridge crossroads. Once the Granger Plantation store, it had been run by the Wallaces for as long as I could remember, and most of the people within the 40-mile stretch between Smellings Creek and Strawberry shopped there. The other three corners of the crossroads were forest land, black and dense. The store consisted of a small building with a gas pump in front and a storage house in back. Beyond the store, against the forest edge, were two gray clapboard houses and a small garden. But there were no fields. The Wallaces did not farm. Stacy and the other students were standing in the doorway of the store when Little Man, Christopher John, Claude, and I ran up. We squeezed through so we could see inside. A man we all knew was Caleb Wallace stood behind the counter. A few other men sat around a stove playing checkers, and Jeremy's older brothers, R.W. and Melvin, who had dropped out of school long ago, leaned sleepy-eyed against the counter staring at us.
"Y'all go on to the back," said Caleb Wallace, "lessen y'all want to buy something. Mr. Dewberry got the music going already."
As we turned away from the entrance, Melvin Sims said,
"Just look at all the little niggas come to dance,"
and the laughter of the men filled the room. Christopher John tugged at my arm.
"I don't like this place, Cassie. Let's go on home."
"We can't leave without Stacy," I said. Music beckoned from the storage room, where Dewberry Wallace was placing round brown bottles on a small table as we crowded in. Aside from the table, there was no furniture in the room. Boxes lined the walls, and the center floor had been cleared for dancing. Several older couples from Great Faith were already engaged in movements I had never seen before.
"What they doing?" asked Little Man.
I shrugged.
"I guess that's what they call dancing."
"There he go,"
someone shouted as the back door of the storeroom slammed shut. Stacy turned quickly and sped to the back of the building. TJ was fleeing straight toward Soldiers Road. Stacy tore across the Wallace yard and, leaping high like a forest fox, fell upon TJ, knocking him down. The two boys rolled toward the road, each trying to keep the other's back pinned to the ground, but then Stacy, who was stronger, gained the advantage, and TJ, finding that he could not budge him, cried,
"Hey, wait a minute, man, let me explain."
Stacy did not let him finish. Jumping up, he pulled TJ up too and hit him squarely in the face. TJ staggered back, holding his eyes as if he were badly hurt, and Stacy momentarily let down his guard. At that moment, TJ rammed into Stacy, forcing the fight to the ground again. Little Man, Christopher John, and I, with the others, circled the fighters, chanting loudly as they rolled back and forth, punching at each other. All of us were so engrossed in the battle that no one saw a mule wagon halt on the road and a giant man step out. It wasn't until I realized that the shouting had stopped behind us and that the girls and boys beside me were falling back that I looked up. Mr. Morrison towered above us. He did not look at me or Christopher John or Little Man, although I knew he had seen us, but walked straight to the fighters and lifted a still swinging Stacy off TJ. After a long, tense moment, he said to Stacy, "You and your sister and brothers get on in the wagon." We walked through the now silent crowd. Caleb and Dewberry Wallace, standing on the front porch of the store with the Simses, stared at Mr. Morrison as we passed, but Mr. Morrison looked through them as if they were not there. Stacy sat in front of the wagon with Mr. Morrison. The rest of us climbed into the back.
"Now we gon' get it," shuddered Christopher John. "I told y'all we should have gone on home."
Before Mr. Morrison took the reins, he handed Stacy a handkerchief in which to wrap his bruised right hand, but he didn't say a word. And it wasn't until we had passed the crossroads leading to Great Faith that the silence was broken.
"Mr. Morrison, you gonna tell Mama?" Stacy asked huskily.
Mr. Morrison was very quiet as Jack the Mule clomped noisily along the dry road. "Seems I heard your mama tell y'all not to go up to that Wallace store," he said at last.
Yes, sir, said Stacy, glancing nervously at Mr. Morrison.
Then he blurted out, "But I had good reason." "Ain't never no reason good enough to go disobey your mama."
The boys and I looked woefully at each other, and my bottom stung from the awful thought of Mama's leather strap against it.
"But Mr. Morrison," I cried anxiously, "T.J. was hiding there 'cause he thought Stacy wouldn't never come down there to get him. But Stacy had to go down there 'cause T.J. was cheating and..."
"Hush, Cassie," Stacy ordered, turning sharply around. I faltered for only a moment before deciding that my bottom was more important than Stacy's code of honor.
"And Stacy had to take the blame for it, and Mama whipped him right in front of God and everybody."
Once the truth had been disclosed, I waited with dry throat and nauseous stomach for Mr. Morrison to say something. When he did, all of us strained tensely forward.
"I ain't gonna tell her," he said quietly.
Christopher John sighed with relief.
"Ain't going down there no more, neither," he promised.
Little man and I agreed. But Stacy stared long and hard at Mr. Morrison.
"How come, Mr. Morrison?" he asked. "How come you ain't going to tell Mama?"
Mr. Morrison slowed Jack as we turned into the road leading home.
"'Cause I'm leaving it up to you to tell her."
"What?" we exclaimed together.
"Sometimes a person's got to fight," he said slowly. "But that store ain't the place to be doing it. From what I hear, folks like them Wallaces got no respect at all for color folks, and they just think it's funny when we fight each other. Your mama knowed them Wallaces ain't good folks. That's why she don't want y'all down there. And y'all owe it to her and y'all selves to tell her. But I'm gonna leave it up to y'all to decide."
Stacy nodded thoughtfully and wound the handkerchief tighter around his wounded hand. His face was not scarred, so if he could just figure out a way to explain the bruises on his hand to Mama without lying, he was in the clear. For Mr. Morrison had not said that he had to tell her. But for some reason I could not understand, he said, "All right, Mr. Morrison, I'll tell her."
"Boy, you crazy,"
I cried, as Christopher John and Little Man speedily came to the same conclusion. If he didn't care about his own skin, he could at least consider ours. But he seemed not to hear us, as his eyes met Mr. Morrison's, and the two of them smiled in subtle understanding, the distance between them fading.